Australia is the only country that wants to do this. And at the last UN climate conference, it was isolated, and a number of countries were trying to bring in a rule that basically ruled that out. And so for Australia, their current climate policy to cheat their way through the Paris Agreement will put them in trouble or put them in hot water with a new US leadership.
One for mum, one for dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and today we're talking about the recent US presidential election and what it means for Australia.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th President of the United States.
You chose hope and unity, decency, science, and yes, truth.
The battle to save our planet by getting climate under control. This is part of the mandate given to us from the American people.
The president-elect will sign a series of executive orders on day one aimed at reversing key Trump-era policies, among them rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement.
Joe Biden promised the U.S. would achieve net zero emissions no later than 2050.
And he's vowing to use every tool of American foreign policy to push the rest of the world to increase emission cuts, and that includes Australia.
Australia will always set its policies based on Australia's interests, Australia's national interests, and the contributions that we're making in these areas.
Net zero emissions by 2050. Net zero by 2050. That's now consistent with the United States, with Japan, with Korea, with Europe.
I don't have to go on with all this BS about a gas-led recovery, which is honestly just political piffle.
Australia's $560 million a year wheat trade with China is also likely to be targeted, along with lobsters, timber, copper ore and sugar.
It's the Australian government's fault. Look, if you don't want us to export to China, fine. I've got no problems with that. You find other markets for us to send our wine to.
The 2020 US presidential election was historic in a number of ways. It was an historic popular vote for Joe Biden, historic turnout for Republicans and for Donald Trump, and the very first female vice president elect, both a woman of African American descent and of South Asian descent as well, which will be very welcome news and an inspiration to little girls everywhere. And in the end, the result does not look like it will be that close. Joe Biden is set to be the next president of the United States, and his election and his administration have some profound implications for Australia. And so today I'm talking to Richie Merzian, director of the Australia Institute's Climate and Energy Program, and Alan Beam, head of our International and Security Affairs Program, about the US election and what we should be looking out for. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 10th of November 2020, and things may have changed since recording. G'day, Richie and Alan.
G'day.
G'day.
So, Richie, I'll come to you first. Probably the biggest change for us that everyone's immediately leapt on has been climate change. What does a Biden administration mean for Australia?
Ebony, I have a big smile on my face. Look, a win for Biden is a win for climate. Like, there were sharply contrasted policies between Trump and Biden. And whilst Trump dismissed global warming altogether, Biden took forward probably the most ambitious climate policies any presidential candidate has put forward. So the US pulled out of the Paris Agreement officially on the 4th of November 2020. He will join back on his first day in on the 20th of January next year. He will try and transition the entire electricity sector to clean energy in 15 years. So you can imagine how big a task that is. It's not dissimilar to our electricity sector, just with a bit of nuke in the middle. It's a huge task. He's also looking at $2 trillion to be spent over the next 4 years lots of jobs and work in electric vehicles. It's just across the board. All but things may around gas, things get a bit more grey. But in terms of what it will mean for Australia, it is a renewed climate leader in the United States.
It was, I think, not long after Election Day that America officially had withdrawn from the Paris Agreement, but Joe Biden's going to fix that pretty quick smart.
That's right. It was the next day. And that's because the way that the Americans under the Obama administration helped design the Paris Agreement was to ensure that it took a very long time to pull out, but it's very quick to get back in. So the 4th of November, the day after, they were officially out. 20th of January, they can sign back in. It'll take 30 days, and then they're officially back in. And the way that Alain Stratt, who is a former White House official with the Obama administration, told us on our webinar last week, he basically said that they were in for 4 years, they'll be out for 3 months, and then they'll be back in. And it's much different to when they weren't in the Kyoto Protocol at all, the last climate agreement. In this one, you have had a continuous US presence, and that will only continue, which is great.
We did talk about on that webinar, and I have heard mentioned in the media, this idea that a Biden administration will be kind of pursuing countries seen as cheating. What does that mean, and why is that a problem for Australia?
This is part of the US's plan to bring forward their economic weight and their power of example to be a climate leader. And if the US is going to be doing its fair share, then it wants to see other countries do the same. And it has specifically said it will find those who are cheating their climate obligations and try and pull them in line. That's a big problem for Australia because, according to the former UN climate chief, Christiana Figueres, Australia is cheating its climate obligations. And it's doing this by trying to use these leftover carbon credits from the Kyoto Protocol, the previous climate agreement, to offset or avoid having to reduce emissions over the next 10 years under the Paris Agreement. Australia is the only country that wants to do this. And at the last UN climate conference, it was isolated and a number of countries were trying to bring in a rule that basically ruled that out. And so for Australia, their current climate policy to cheat their way through the Paris Agreement will put them in trouble or put them in hot water with a new US leadership.
And how might we get in trouble? What kind of sanctions might we be looking at?
So in addition to a lot of pressure being brought to bear in the UN framework, you will see the US look at using its trade policy as well. And whilst the EU are looking at carbon border tariffs, the US could be going down a similar path. And so you'd be seeing a lot of Australian products that are being sent to these markets now facing an impost on the border. And given that Australia does export a lot of fossil fuels to begin with, but then also a lot of the other sort of goods that Australia manufactures is based off our quite heavy polluting industry and heavy polluting electricity sector, it could make our goods more expensive and that would damage us here at home.
Alan, I know you've worked in the climate policy space yourself, but we might circle back to climate to finish. I want to ask you about China. Obviously, the Trump administration was hugely chaotic and very unpredictable. What will a Biden administration change about its approach to China, and what impact does that have on Australia?
Look, Ebony, I think for the United States, the substance of the relationship with China won't change substantially. But I think that the theatrics will soften very substantially and that we will see from the Biden administration a much more deliberate, a much more calibrated approach to the management of what are quite serious economic problems between the two countries. They're very different sorts of economies, and the extraordinarily fast growth rate of the Chinese economy in particular, and the shift of so many industry-related jobs away from the United States, not just to China, by the way. Even China is becoming too expensive for repetition industry type jobs. And so we're finding Mercedes-Benzes are being made in South Africa and other parts of South America now. But there will be much more in the way of traditional statecraft applied to the way in which that relationship works. I think that the Biden administration will distinguish itself very clearly from the Trump administration in a couple of important respects. The first one will be it will repopulate the State Department. The State Department has been gutted, and large parts of the seventh floor, the famous seventh floor of Foggy Bottom, have been empty for the last 4 years. I think that Biden will move very, very quickly to appoint a Secretary of State and will move quickly to re-establish an effective American diplomacy. Now, that has a fair few implications for Australia. While we will probably continue to stay very close to the United States in the substance of the management of the bilateral relationship with China, we too are going to have to change the rhetoric. Our rhetoric is going to have to be much, much less strident and boisterous, much more deliberate, much more managed, much quieter.
Put down the megaphone.
Put down the megaphone. Pick up the telephone. you know, it's an entirely different approach, and one that, quite frankly, the Australia Institute has been advocating for most of the past couple of years, but most particularly over the last year or so, where the relationship between Australia and China has become extremely tense and has reached the lowest point that I can certainly remember since we normalised relationships back in 1972.
Yeah, well, just for people who might not be paying attention, what are some of those issues looking like for Australia at the moment?
Pretty serious. What China has done is to have imposed a series of tariffs, generally pursuant to the WTO rules, actually. So we're being challenged for real or confected misdemeanours in the way in which we have implicit subsidies for various parts of the commodities trade that we have with China, whether it's in the wine industry or in barley. Now, from what I can make of the nature of China's charges, I don't think they'll stick in the WTO. But what they will do is discomfort and divide the support base that the government has from minerals producers, from rural producers of all kinds. And that, I think, is part of the game that China is playing. It is using the trade relationship to put political pressure on the Morrison government.
So we have seen most of that, the problems with the relationship manifest through trade, but I guess in the last couple of years we have seen Australia maybe acting more like we did in the Howard years as a kind of deputy sheriff to the United States in the region. Is that going to have to change as well?
Well, we should never have sort of demeaned ourselves to being a deputy sheriff anywhere. It's really a very silly idea. But the fact is that we more or less continue to do that by sort of taking a very supine and sort of follow the leader approach to the remarks, for example, of Secretary Pompeo. Now, Secretary Pompeo is pretty strident in his own dealings with China. And we have been, I think, a bit follow the leader there, acting much more in the interests of the United States, where a certain amount of collegiality always helps, even though the Trump administration liked to put a bit of pressure on alliances. Nonetheless, it has been convenient for Australia to look as though it's a very close supporter of the United States. But in this particular circumstance, we've acted against our own interests, not in support of them. So it's a curious thing that we pay the costs of supporting the United States in its fight with China. And I think there are many rural producers in Australia who think that that is, to use a Trumpism, a very bad deal.
Yeah, so in summary, I guess, this new administration is going to be a bit of a circuit breaker and Australia, probably like the Biden administration, has to reinvest in diplomacy.
It sure has, just as I think the Biden administration will be much more evidently diplomatic, not only with China, by the way, but with its traditional partners in Europe.
Well, it would be hard to be less diplomatic than the Trump administration.
That is just too true. But not just Trump, but I mean his cabinet officers are also very much in need of exposure to Diplomacy 101. Perhaps we are too. But I think it will come more easily for Australia than it will for some of the Americans. And the sooner we do that, the better it's going to be, but particularly for our commercial interests in Australia, for our miners, for our rural producers, for our horticulturalists, for our fishing industry. I mean, 2 tons of lobsters rotting on the tarmac in Shanghai is just not a good look and probably an even worse smell. But
just a quick note here that Alan's SD card on his recorder ran out here, so apologies. The rest of the audio is from my audio track and it's just slightly quieter, but you can still hear him, and here is Alan again.
But more seriously, we have to normalise that relationship. And I'm actually quietly confident that with the swearing in of President Biden on the 20th of January, ministers like Simon Birmingham will be given a bit more latitude and a bit more scope to get into the business of repairing that relationship as best he can. Mm. That will be, I think, one good result coming out of the US election.
And I want to just bring us back to climate change to finish up. Obviously, much like trade relationships, climate change is only going to be solved globally. Alan, what are your reflections on the future of climate policy under a Biden administration and the implications for Australia?
Well, I completely support what Richie said earlier. At this point, the pressure is on Australia, and coming from our closest ally, as we're constantly reminded. The United States is not going to put up with Australian or anybody else's recalcitrance in this. So it's all very well for the government to say, we're not going to be bullied. No, we're not going to be bullied. We are going to make a very sensible decision to go back to where we once were, because it is in our interests to do so. We won't do it simply because Biden's administration says fall in line. We will do it because if we stay out of line, we will pay the penalties, and they will be heavy. Border tariffs are a real possibility, not just in our trade with the United States, but also our trade more generally around the world. And if the United States sets the lead, everyone else will follow.
Will follow, yeah.
My word, they will. 10 years ago, Australia was a world leader in the climate change business. We were right at the forefront of inventive, creative, imaginative policies. We were right in the forefront of working out how to put a price on carbon, how to run international carbon market registries, how they could be kept free of criminal interference from parts of the world that actually did interfere with some of the carbon registries. We were right up there. And so it is actually an opportunity for Australia to get back in the game. I mean, we are the 13th biggest economy. We are a continent all on our own. We are very subject to the pressures of climate change, particularly the temperature pressures of climate change. But on the eastern seaboard, huge storms are going to be much more common as well. Mm. So we have it really within our reach to get back into business as one of the world's leading players on climate. And that is an opportunity that we cannot afford to miss. And Biden will provide it for us.
Well, that's certainly a good opportunity for us to seize. Whether or not the Prime Minister will seize that opportunity remains to be seen. Richie, he certainly didn't seem enthusiastic this week. But I might just end on a hopeful note. We have seen a huge announcement from the New South Wales Energy and Environment Minister, Matt Keane, this week. Can you just take us through that and why that maybe offers a bit more hope on the climate policy front for Australia?
Sure. I mean, this is a coalition minister for energy and environment proposing probably one of the largest renewable packages we've ever seen in Australia, 12 gigawatts of energy generation and another 2 for pumped hydro as well. It will massively change how the state with the lowest renewable penetration gets its electricity, and it will almost flip it on its head. And if you ask Matt Keane why, as we did on our webinar a few weeks ago, he'll tell you it's because 4 out of the 5 coal-fired power stations that they've currently got will have to retire in the next 15 years. And no one is building back with coal. It's expensive and unreliable and doesn't suit our energy needs going forward. it's worth remembering that the pressure on the federal government is not just from the top, it's from the bottom. And New South Wales, even if it does have a coalition government, has always had a hand in climate. In 2003, it was the first jurisdiction in the world to have a carbon price. Mm. And so really, this is just a return to form in New South Wales. And hopefully we will see a return to form at the federal level. And we were reminded of this on Monday when Zali Steggall introduced her Climate Change Act. It's a very straightforward, simple act. It's not even that ambitious. It's just good common sense and evidence-based policy. It's just sensible, which maybe is ridiculous these days. But it will force some of these modern liberals to actually justify why they can't support a middle-of-the-road path, an evidence-based path to climate. And so I think we'll be seeing a lot more of this happen at the national level.
Thanks, Richie. Thanks, Alan. That's been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned and leave us a review if you've enjoyed today's episode, because it helps other people to find the podcast. Don't forget to enrol in the Australia Institute's Economics Academy, where we unpack basic economic concepts to help you participate in the national economic debate. That's with Richard Dennis and Matt Grudnoff. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. You can find all of our research on climate and international and security affairs by visiting tai.org.au, and you can find us on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Alan Beam is at Miranda Prausis. Richie Merzian is at Richie Merzian, and this episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. Keep washing those hands, wear a mask, stay safe, stay 1.5 metres away, and thanks for listening.